This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May 12th, episode 1427. Today's show is brought to you by Horsewear. Good morning, Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Exciting, knowing that for the rest of my life, I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Thursday. For those of you with real jobs, tomorrow's Friday, so the weekend's going to be here. You'll be able to go out and ride in no time. But I have to ask you, Mary, with all that rain you've had in Texas, have the mosquitoes hatched?
Yes, and they have returned with a vengeance. Or actually, they never left. I was getting bit by mosquitoes on Christmas.
Well, we had a hatch here. We had rain last week, and we had a hatch. And oh my God, last night and today, went out to get the horses, and they were just covered in mosquitoes. This is the time of year in Florida when you have to pretty much spray yourself the minute you walk out the door, because you can't wait 2 minutes. You'll be eaten alive.
Did you see my Benadryl crisis on Facebook?
No.
Okay, so you may know that Guthrie is allergic to all of the things. I've actually had
Guthrie's
testing.
Guthrie's pretty much allergic to everything in the world.
Yes, including any
explain
bug.
Explain to everybody, new listeners, who Guthrie is.
Oh, Guthrie is my very special quarter horse, whom I love dearly. And he's kind of like that kid in school who couldn't go on the field trips without his mom.
And he had to have his
EpiPen yeah. ready. And, you know, just kind of a special child Guthrie
this is.
One
of her Road to the Horses.
Yes. And so he's got allergies. I've had the allergy testing done. And he's been doing really well. Every year his immune system gets a little better and he's much better with his allergies. But, we just, like you said, you know, we just had all these bugs for like 2 days just come back with a vengeance. And I went to get him out to ride him the other day, and he had a huge baseball size welt on his face.
Oh.
And I looked at him. I'm like, were you bit by a rattlesnake? And no, it was just a bug bite. And so I normally have Dex on hand, which I think is short. Is it dexamethasone? It's like a steroid that you give them it's short term, you know, if they have any flare ups. I didn't have any on hand. I don't want to really go crazy giving them that anyway. So I took to Facebook and asked about Benadryl, and, that's what I actually gave them, and it did work. You can give horses Benadryl. Huh. I would say the disclaimer is consult your vet beforehand.
How many pills Benadryl do you have to give them?
The dosage varied. Some people said I need to give him like 48 pills. But I think it ended up being one pill for every 200 pounds. I accidentally got the liquid instead. So I gave him...
You had to squirt it in?
The measurement ended up being the whole bottle for feeding. And so I just poured it in. It was bubblegum flavor. So he lapped it up. And either I can't be for sure if the Benadryl calmed everything down or if it was just the natural order of things that calmed the welts down. But he was still standing, didn't knock him out.
And I'm going to reiterate what Mary said. We do not give veterinary advice here on the show. So do not take anything
consult
we say.
Your vet. Yes.
This worked for Mary, may not work for you, and might kill your horse. So.
Yes. Yes. There's all sorts of things you need to look up, like make sure it doesn't have any other active ingredients. And so, you know, if you do it, I'd say consult your vet and...
Yeah, don't take our word for it.
But
glad it worked.
It's a grain of salt. It did, yeah.
Now, it could be an expensive fix if you have to buy a whole bottle of Benadryl for every dose.
Right. And I'm not looking to give it to him every day, but, you know, and he doesn't, he rarely gets these flare-ups anymore where he actually gets hives and he's itching like crazy. But when he does, I have to do something about it because then it starts this vicious cycle.
Did he sleep, like fall asleep the whole afternoon?
You know, antihistamines generally amp him up. You can't really give that kind of stuff. I don't think you're allowed to give it if you're going to be doing competitions because it is supposed to have a sedative effect. But with Guthrie, I had him on
it
a daily.
It might actually test, too. I'm not sure.
Yeah, there are some. Yeah, you have to look. There are some that will test. There is a long-term acting steroid shot that you can't give them because not only does it sedate them, but it makes their joints feel really good too. So it's just like giving them bute or something. So you have to be careful, and you know, obviously, I don't have any competitions on the horizon. So I didn't have a problem with that. But with Guthrie, I had him on a daily antihistamine a couple years ago, and he was amped up. And I just thought it was my imagination, but I found out, yeah, sometimes it can have the opposite reaction, and that is something you do need to worry about if you do decide to give Benadryl. Is for some horses, it does kind of make them amped up and it raises their heart rate, makes them sweat. So, you know, again, consult your vet.
Very good. Well, one of the, it's appropriate today that we're talking about mosquitoes being sponsored by Horsewear, because head on over there to horsewear.com for all of your fly protection needs. And Jennifer yesterday was on there looking for a fly sheet for her new horse, her new thoroughbred.
And I have one.
He is just like all the thoroughbreds we've ever had, super sensitive to the bugs. They you know, thoroughbreds, as you're learning, are interesting creatures.
Yes.
In that they're tough in many ways, and you know, they will take you where you want to go quickly, and you know, they can do so many different things, but
I've heard they're fast.
They're wussies. They're wusses in so many other ways. They have thin skin. They're, you know, we often correlate our greyhound to the thoroughbreds because the greyhounds have thin skin. They have a lot of the same attributes as the greyhounds. They really do. It's interesting to, when you own both, to see how much they have in common. But that's not what today's show's about. Jennifer, what's coming up?
Coming up on today's Q&A with Mary Kitzmiller, brought to you by Horsewear. Mary picks Stuart Pittman's brain about this fall's thoroughbred makeover. And then Marsha Harford stops by with some insight on putting out a winning performance following her win at the recent Florida Mustang Makeover. And filling the space in between, Mary's got an answer for a horse training fancier. So stay tuned for the fray, because it's National Limerick Day, and all of us couldn't be happier.
Well, look at you.
Oh, that was clever.
That was very good. Now, we have to live up to that the rest of the show. We might as well just quit.
The only limericks I know can't be said on the air.
Why would I guess that? So we have a whole bunch of listener questions to get to. But before we do that, I just wanted to, I got an email yesterday from a new listener to Horses in the Morning. We have a lot of those here lately. And of course, now I'll announce to your audience who only listens to you once a month, you can now listen to the live show on our app, on the Horse Radio Network app. iOS or Android, just download it on your app store. It's free. It's easy to use. And there's a live button now, so you can listen live. Apparently, people say the sound is actually better than listening on your browser on your phone, so you can listen while you're doing other things, and it just makes it so much simpler. And of course, you can listen to the recorded version on our Horses in the Morning on the app too. So, but I got this email from this lady who said, I'm a new listener. I don't understand how Horses in the Morning works. You seem to have different people all the time. This is how it works. We have, the show started almost 6 years ago with Jamie Jennings and I. Jamie's on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. We started the show with us 5 days a week. We did that for a couple of years until Jamie rudely decided to get pregnant. And then she rudely decided that she got pregnant, she would have a baby. Well, and I'm just joking, people, about that. I'm being very sarcastic. So she went off and had her baby, and we made it a deal that she had to cut back her hours because now she had all the horses and the baby to take care of and everything. So she cut back to Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Well, we needed something to do on Tuesday and Thursday, and I hate talking to myself on the air. So what we decided to do was come up with something different on those 8 days, those Tuesdays and Thursdays all month long, something different every Tuesday and Thursday with different co-hosts to mix it up. And that's why you hear different people on the on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Mary so kindly agreed to do this years ago. Couple years ago now, we had been friends, and I love working with Mary, and she said, yeah, I'll come on and do it, and we've been doing it together ever since. So that's why Tuesdays and Thursdays are a little different. I hope that helps explain it. And you know, it's interesting because a lot of our Tuesdays and Thursday show, many of them, including Mary, show up in our top 10 of all episodes every month.
So, oh, sweet.
So, yeah. So it is. It's turned out very well for everybody. And I get to work with some really cool people on Tuesdays and Thursdays, including my friend Mary. So it was partly selfish on my part. So just saying. Mary, how about some listener questions?
Let's do it.
Let's start with Jerry, who has one. And this came in the form of a voicemail. So I'll play it.
This is Jerry Johnson. I was leaving a training question for the great Mary Kitzmiller, movie savant and horse trainer. How do you get your horses to go over surfaces that they seem hesitant to initially, but when they know they're on their way back, they have zero issue doing? I think it's just an attitude thing, and they know what they're doing and smarter than me. So what are your suggestions?
Well, you know, I have the same problem with Scooter when we're out driving or even walking him. If there's a surface change, like it goes from macadam to concrete, like driveways, and if they're mm-hmm. white concrete and you have to step mm-hmm. up an inch and then you have to step off at an inch at the other end, he just has this major issue with it and will take a flying leap even though it's only an inch. So I'm with Jerry. And Jerry has draft horses too, by the way.
So they shouldn't get too airborne, hopefully,
right.
going over stuff. You know, I've noticed the same thing, too. I was just leading my horse back from I was at Earth Day, Texas, and I had to lead my horse down a road to get back to the stall. And anytime there was a storm drain or painted, you know, painted lines in the road or like a metal strip that goes across the road, my Mustang wanted to do the same thing. And from my understanding, you know, they don't have the same kind of depth perception that we have. So what may seem like a harmless, discolored spot in the road to them could be a canyon. They're not sure. And so they're really hesitant about crossing. The long answer is, or I guess it would be the short answer. Generally, the more I work on body control and foot control, the less those problems crop up when I'm on the trail or riding out on the road. And it doesn't seem like the two would correlate, but the more I can get control of my horse's feet, meaning, you know, my goal is 100%. I want to be able to control where you put your feet 100% of the time. Are we all going to get there? No, you know. At best, maybe we have 70% control of their feet. But once I have a good deal of control over where they put their feet, then I should be able to put those feet anywhere I want, that be that over a bridge or into a pond or over a spot on the road. So generally working on body and foot control tends to eliminate all those problems or brings them down to a degree that they're very manageable. Now, when you're in the moment and, you know, okay, my horse is freaking out right now, what do I do? If your horse is willing to cross, what I would say is spend a couple minutes getting your horse to cross repeatedly. They can't jump it forever. Some may think they can, but the more you get them to cross, the more they realize, oh, it's a lot of effort bolting and jumping over this spot. Maybe I'll just walk across. So once they cross it in a way that's more relaxed and quiet, you can release on them, pet them, reward them. If you're, you know, inclined to do positive reinforcement, this would be a good time for a cookie. And then go about your business. And, you know, maybe for a few days you have to kind of stick on those spots. For a few minutes, just cross, you know, just keep crossing over and over and over again. Just relax. You're not punishing them. You're not trying to make them hustle or anything like that. Pretty soon they're going to realize, all right, if I cross something and I'm silly about it, I have to keep doing it until I calm down. Maybe it's just not worth the effort.
Jennifer, you have done this with Scooter. He also will not get in the wash rack because it is a change in surface again and has had a problem with that. But Jennifer does a kind of a different technique. You want to explain that a little bit, the walking on, backing off?
Well, with Scooter, he's a little bit of an alpha pony. And this works really, really well with him. Whenever I have surfaces that he doesn't want to step on or go across, I ask him to approach the surface. And when he starts to approach the surface, he takes the tension out of the lead rope, which I have put a gentle pull on. And as soon as he makes that effort to take a step towards the surface, I ask him to back straight away from the surface. And it seems to work really well with him because the only time he backs away from another horse is if that other horse is indicating to him that that other horse is the leader of the group. For example, Beaker would make him back away when he wanted to come over and chew on Beaker's face. Beaker would make him back up because Beaker didn't want his face chewed on. And that works really well because he's going, oh, well, you're in charge. You can tell me to back up. Well, he wanted to back up because he didn't want to step on this, on whatever it was. So he doesn't make that connection that, oh, I want to back up because I don't want to step on it. He makes the connection that you just told me to back up and golly, I'm going to comply. And that just seems to sink in. And I start out with surfaces that are mildly intimidating. And then I work towards surfaces that are much more intimidating.
And what she'll do is she'll have him get his 2 feet, front feet on and back him up, have him get the two mm-hmm. front feet on, back him up. And then to the point where he has all 4 feet and then back him up. So it's a incremental thing and practicing it that way, a couple feet on, back up. And that's how we got him to load in the trailer was kind of the same way, actually.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing. That's really good method for, you know, if it's a surface that's not like crossable, you can't cross over it and come back and cross over it again, or it's a situation like a wash bay where you don't really want to be sending your horse back and forth. The ground's too hard and wet to really do that safely. That approach and retreat that you're using, I think, is perfect. And I think the reason the backing up makes them feel more at ease is, you know, especially with the trailer, if I have to go to a show and my horse isn't loading in the trailer, I tend to get more like a predator. Like, I want you in there now. And then as soon as you get in there, I want to slam the door on you so we can go because we're late. And if you act like you have all the time in the world, and you act like you let the horse know, listen, just because you get on this thing, I'm not going to meet, and if you're scared, I'm not going to immediately trap you in there and go flying down the road. Or you shouldn't do that. Sometimes we do. But if you give me a little effort, if you just look at the trailer, you smell it a little bit, I'm going to back you away and tell you that's good. You don't have to get on right now. I'm not forcing you on. I just want you to try. And I think for the horse, that helps them to see, okay, I'm not being corralled into this against my will necessarily. I'm not being trapped, because the moment they feel like they're being trapped is the moment they're going to do whatever it takes to get out of that situation.
It's like that boss we've all had where it was our idea, but we had to make it their idea before they would implement it. So it's the same kind of thing, right? It has to become their idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And really what you're rewarding, I'm just rewarding any kind of try. If you just sit there with your blinkers on, you're not paying attention, you know, that I want you to look at it, acknowledge there's a trailer there. Sometimes horses shut down so much due to fear or stress or anxiety that they'll act like there's not even a trailer there. They're not even here right now. They're in their happy place. And so I just keep working with them gently until I see them turn on, until I see those ears flick forward and their eyes brighten up and they start, okay, I guess there's a trailer here. Why don't I look at it and maybe I'll smell it? And as soon as I see that try, you know, I'll go take them somewhere else for a few minutes. You know, let's go over here and graze and then we'll come back again.
All right, let's take a listen to another one. This is Lindsay.
Good morning, Mary. This is Lindsay Roush in Oxford, Indiana, and I had a training question for you. What do you do when you've got a horse you're working in the round pen that doesn't want to move out on you and you really have to push on them to get them going around? Thank you. I look forward to your answer.
That's a really good one. So generally, I like to get my horse doing all three gates in the round pen, walk, trot, canter. And I want them to do those moving forward and moving free and relaxed. And for most horses, that's not too big of a problem. But every once in a while, I get one for whatever reason. Maybe it's the type of horse he is. Maybe he has some history, or he's just generally kind of doesn't want to move out so much. Doesn't want to really move up. And I feel like, oh my gosh, I really have to increase pressure and I don't want to go there. One of the things I'll do to make it a little easier to send my horse forward is instead of using a whip or like a stick and string, I really like a flag because it takes very little to get quite a bit. So that really helps me send a horse forward more. But in the case that, you know, I feel like, man, I'm really having increased pressure more than I'm comfortable with, and the horse still isn't moving out, lower your expectations for a little bit. You know, if you can't get your horse to canter and you feel like you're just going to have to wail on him to get him to canter, you don't want to wail on him. Settle for an exuberant trot and reward that. And then when you can get that, usually it's not too much to ask them to move into canter. Another thing I'll say is for the horses that don't like to move out, I see a lot of people have trouble because the horse is kind of sticky, lazy, or they don't want to move out, and the person wants them to lope in the round pen for, or canter in the round pen for 20 minutes. It's like, well, you finally got him to canter. Now you're asking him to keep cantering. What incentive does he have to move out? You're still putting the pressure on him. So I would work more on transitions. Can you even get to canter? As soon as they find that gate, relax, release all pressure, reward, let them settle all the way back down, have a break. The horses that don't like to move out, giving them a reward of letting them relax and settle down and slow down is huge for them. And their stamina is not going to be quite as high as, say, maybe a thoroughbred. So just see if you can get them to that gate or even get them to have more energy in the gate they're already in and reward thousands of those little transitions before you start asking them to hold that gate longer and longer.
Patience.
Yes, you got to build on it.
That's so hard because as a, you know, we're just not patient people.
No, we want it now.
We want it now. Jennifer, did you have anything to add to that?
I concur 100%. Scooter is a sticky pony. And I have discovered with Scooter that his greatest reward is letting him stand still and do nothing. He just thinks that's the best. So I've kind of taken that route with him. Yeah, Glenn's too. They're just like each other. If he will trot forward 3/4 of the way around the round pen, it's reward time. Let's walk and take a break. Well, the next time I ask him to trot, he's going to be more willing to do it because he's going, well, I don't have to do this very long. I might as well just get it over with because I get a reward when I'm done. Well, this time maybe I'll ask him to go a whole round around the round pen before I ask him to walk. But I might keep it at one lap for quite some time. So I don't turn the pressure up too quick. A lot of folks want to, oh, well, he did it that well this time, let's crank it up a little further. I don't crank it up very fast with him because he's quick that way. No. You lied to me. You're not really going to give me a break. You're going to make me go around 5 times this time.
Well, and
so I have
I think
to be careful not to turn it up too quick.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point because people often know about the flight response in the horse, and most people will understand that they can also have a fight response if the flight response isn't available to them. But what some people don't see is they also have this response where they will shut down. I see this a lot in donkeys and mules. And this is where I learned how to be a little bit more patient and ask for less or ask for more appropriate. You know, have more appropriate goals for your particular horse. Is you're in danger if you're adding too much pressure and you're not rewarding of your horse shutting down. And when they get to that point, you can't train on them anymore. And there is not enough pressure in the world that will make them do what you want. It's just not going to happen. It's a really bad spot to find
yourself
in.
Stamp that with a gold star.
Yes. Yeah. And if you ever happen to find yourself in that position, I'm going to tell you right now, there is no winning that one. You just put your horse away, take a breather, come back the next day, try again. If they go into that mode, they're completely shut down. They're in their own little world. No training, nothing is going to work. You put them away, come back tomorrow.
Do you want to try one more here before we have to get to our first guest?
Let's do it.
All right, one more. This is from Rosie. Who, anybody listening to the show yesterday, you heard Rosie. She gave us a Spanish lesson.
Hola, everybody. This is Rosie Morello. I'm calling because I wanted to ask Mary Kitzmiller a question. I'm currently taking lessons in Western dressage, and I'm trying to teach my older horse, Argus, who's age about 23, how to be more flexible. I'm trying to teach him how to be okay using a carrot stick or a whip because he gets very afraid. How can I help him become more flexible using those tools, but first, you know, desensitizing him to them?
Okay, so you kind of get the idea there.
Okay, so on the flexible part...
of a 23-year-old.
yes. Oh, they can be flexible. I would say take the same approach I would with any horse. For instance, if you're flexing their head and neck, it's not a good idea, I think, just to reach around and pull their head around because you'll actually get them to lay on that lead rope or that rein a lot heavier if you do that. So... you know, take it in little increments. Can I get you to tip your ear to the inside? Okay. Can I see a little bit more of your inside eye? Can I get you to bring your nose around? So instead of just kind of trying to pull them around or make them conform to this frame that you want them in, just take any little give you can get. And I sort of, like when we're talking about flexing the head and neck, I just sort of tease them around, you know, any little give they give me, where they're trying to be more flexible, I give them a little release and then I ask again. So I'd say hundreds and thousands of those little baby gives. And pretty soon you can get your horse to flex more and more. I'd say you'll find even your older horses have the ability to reach their nose all the way around to their rump to bite at a fly. So I think they're plenty flexible as a general rule. It's just teaching them how to give to pressure that is where we run into more issues. So no matter what part of the body you're trying to get more flexible, just ask for 100,000 tiny little gives and little tries on his part, and then you can build from there. On the whip, it's usually pretty simple for me. You know, some people say if their horse freaks out at the whip, they'll say, oh, he must have been beat with a whip in the past. It's like, nah, not necessarily. It's just a different tool and they don't see what it is. And so if I'm using a dressage whip to, say, do in-hand work, I just get it out. And before I really ask them to move around with it, I just rub them all over with it and, you know, release pressure when they're relaxed. Or if you're doing positive reinforcement, you can give them a little food reward. So I rub them all over their body, even in places I'm never going to use the whip, like up under their belly, insides and outsides of their legs, on their face. And I'll work on that until they're fairly comfortable with it before I actually start asking them to do anything with it.
Very good. Thank you, Mary. And we'll get to some more questions here if we have time a little later in the show. But we have to get to our first guest. Stuart Pittman is coming on from the Thoroughbred Makeover Retired Racehorse Project in just a minute, right after we hear from our friends at Horseware.
Another long, tough fly season is right around the corner. And the only choice for this fly season are the Amigo range of fly sheets, because they're built tough and feature the latest in design comfort, bug-busting technology, and sun-protecting fabrics. And the Amigo range has a fly sheet for every budget, from the Amigo Bug Buster Vamoose with no fly zone to the Amigo Bug Rug fly sheet. Find Amigo fly sheets at your local or online retailer, or you can visit horseware.com. That's Horseware, HORSEWARE.com.
As I said, Jennifer was just on yesterday looking for a new fly sheet for her much bigger horse. So I think we'll be having one of those in our life here very soon. Well, you've heard him on the show before. He normally comes on when we have Jamie on, but today we asked him to come on and Well, we'll find out why here in a second. But Stuart Pittman is the creator of the Thoroughbred Makeover and also the Retired Racehorse Project. We've been really having you on, Stuart, since you had the first one at your farm with 10 people involved. So thank you for coming on all these years. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It's always fun.
Well, Stuart, you're here for a different reason today. We're here to beat you up and find out who we can bribe to make Mary a winner, because now we really have a vested interest with one of our hosts having a horse in the competition.
Who you can bribe?
But keep it on the down low. We don't want anyone
We don't want anybody to know. We're just, yes. Yeah.
From what I've heard of Mary, she doesn't need a bribe. She just needs a horse.
Well, she's got that.
No.
She's got that. Her name is Moonshine. Don't you love that? That's perfect.
Maintenance Moonshine?
No, just Moonshine. Just Moonshine.
Oh, just Moonshine.
His name was Landon, and normally I don't change names, but I had to change that name.
Ah, okay.
So
Mary? That's his jockey club name was Landon, or his jockey club
His jockey club name was Landon's first.
Did you have an old Landon's boyfriend first. Named Landon okay. You didn't like, or what?
Landon sounds like a soap opera character.
It really does, actually.
It does.
You're right.
It's also a high school, and my high school used to play football against them, and we were rivals, so we really liked to beat up on Landon. So I hear you.
So do I. No, I'm joking.
So now, Stuart, Mary is used to doing Mustangs, been in the Mustang Makeover, has been a Road to the Horse twice, has done quarter horses. This has been a whole new experience for her with the Thoroughbred. And it was because of the show and us having you on and, talking about this over the years that I think she decided to do this. And she's finding out the Thoroughbreds are a little different.
Good. I hope she likes them. Okay, if you don't.
Well, no, actually, he is a really cool dude. One of the things I posted about him early on is he's got an interesting whorl pattern on his face. And everyone who saw the picture, they were like, oh, good luck with him. But no, he's been really a great little horse. He's a young gelding. He was last raced in February of this year. And he's a really cool horse. He's incredibly smart. He's amazing from an athletic standpoint. I always tell people he can practically canter in place, which I'm sure will come in useful somehow. I'll incorporate that into my freestyle. But he's very, very opinionated. And one of the things about him, and I don't think this is indicative to thoroughbreds in general, but he's very mouthy. If I'm not looking, my arm will be in his mouth.
Yeah. Was he cut late? You know?
Sorry?
Was he cut late? Do you know?
I think he was. He acts very, yeah. very steady. I recently turned him out, and one of my mares went up to him and pretty much acted like he was a stud. So that was interesting.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that explains the mouthy.
Yeah.
That's okay. You can teach him to do something in the freestyle with his mouth, maybe.
Yeah, you can throw treats into the audience or something.
Hit you with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
You can have him throw candy into the audience. You know what? That's a big audience will love that. That'd be great.
Yeah.
I'm not
Well, you know, if you want to win, you have to do something that really kind of catches the judge's eye. And I guess you know about all that because you've done the Mustang Makeover.
That leads to the next question Mary has. Go ahead, Mary.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. This is actually a legitimate question. I've been racking my brains. I've got them penciled in for the freestyle class, and I had an idea, super top secret, but it's contingent.
That's why it's
on
the radio, right?
Yeah, we don't. Exactly. Nobody's listening.
Well, I'm not gonna reveal it all, but it is contingent on whether or not I can use fire, and so I do need to know: can I use fire in my freestyle?
Let me look at the rules. We addressed that, I think. Do you remember in the rules? I think we said anything like that, clear it in advance, give us the specifics. And, you know, we need to make sure that there aren't other horses in the arena. And there are not other horses in the arena when you're doing your freestyle. They'll be warming up outside. And so I know that I think the Mustang Makeover, they said no pyrotechnics. Is that right?
It depends on where it is. Someone almost blew up the Will Rogers facility. So if you do Will Rogers anymore, because it's like a historical building, the general is no fire. Someone filled balloons with some sort of gas and they shot them. And I think all the audience lost their eyebrows in that style.
Stuart's now seeing his insurance rates doubling.
So for that particular venue, but I think at the other ones around the country, you can. It usually depends on the venue.
We do address it. It says that the contestants will describe in advance any props used, blah, blah, blah. Plans to use firearms, pyrotechnics, or any props that might be disruptive to horses must be pre-approved by RRP. So the answer is yes, if we pre-approve it. And I think fire is fine as long as it's contained. You know?
As long as it's not attached to C4, you know.
I'll keep the explosions down to a minimum.
No, yeah. Dynamite, so Mary.
There are no rules against fire, and there will certainly be some guns going off because I know we have mounted cowboy shooters. So go for it.
Awesome.
Burn the place down, Mary. He just gave you permission.
It's the older arena at the Kentucky Horse Park, the covered arena. They probably wouldn't mind if it burned down and they could rebuild it.
As long as someone is insured on this, then I'm cool with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, we won't tell the insurance company that you're planning to burn the place down.
And your entry fee just doubled, Mary. Just
actually, that's a fun fact about Road to the Horse. One year at the same, not the same arena, but it was also at the Kentucky Horse Park. Abby Schlum was doing fire, and I guess they didn't tell anyone. And I guess they had to keep the fire department from like breaking down the doors. Like they were a step away from having to evacuate everyone because they didn't quite mention there'd be fire.
It'd really suck if the sprinklers went off over the whole audience too. That would put a damper on things.
You know, I do have to say that for the freestyle, and last year was the first year that we'd done a freestyle. So we took a lot of, we got a lot of advice from Mustang Makeover people. A couple things. One, the audience loved the freestyle. I mean, Carolyn Carlson, our vice president, was sort of saying that the freestyle is everything, man. I mean, we should just have like a whole separate thing of the freestyle. And why are we doing all these other boring disciplines? It really was
like
exciting.
Dressage.
And there's obvious reasons why we do those disciplines. But the freestyle, you know, to me, hearing from people who've done Mustang Makeover, and I've never been in person. Actually, I did go to a regional Mustang Makeover, but you know, the national championships and the million Mustang Million that you did and everything. It's just incredible what, you know, a horse and a human being can do together if they're creative. And, you know, we all get stuck in our disciplines and it never occurs to us that we can teach horses to do things like go up on trucks and, you know, just amazing stuff that's outside the box. And so, It's a really exciting thing, and because it's never really been done with thoroughbreds off the racetrack, other than last year a little bit, it's even more exciting. And we've got this year some tough competition for you. We've got a bunch of people who've done Mustang Makeover. We've got a bunch of people, a lot more people in Western disciplines than last year, which is great. And in fact, we're doing an article for our Off Track Thoroughbred magazine. The cover story article is going to be about expanding the market into the Western disciplines because they're bigger than the English disciplines and thoroughbreds have been more prominent in the English, but there's some Western folks that are getting turned on to thoroughbreds. So it's really exciting. And we're really glad that somebody as, you know, experienced as you and talented, I hope as you, is going to be showing off in there.
We hope too, because we're bragging on her all the time. So
I know I've got to deliver, but and in my personal experience, you know, this is the first off the track thoroughbred I've really had a lot of time with to train. And I'm watching this guy and the way he moves and the way he goes. For one thing, he has a Western pleasure lope that's just natural to him. And I'm watching him go around the round pen. I'm like, how are you doing this? And I'm looking at him thinking, oh my gosh, you would be an amazing cow horse or a barrel horse. He really collects up under himself. He uses himself the way I'd love to see a good Western performance horse do. And I have to admit, even I was a little surprised. I'm like, yeah, you're going to be everything I need as a Western rider to do what I want to do. And so it was a really nice surprise to see how athletic he is. And I'm even told, and I have to kind of research this, someone told me that to put the cow in the quarter horse, they went to the thoroughbred to put that want to work those cows. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Yeah, there's a great video that a guy named Dale Simonson in South Dakota put up with one of his thoroughbreds. He does nothing but thoroughbreds for ranch work. And just turning the horse loose with the cow. And he was working that cow like he knew what he was doing and loving it. And I guess they say they can work all day. Never get tired with thoroughbreds.
Well, and they like a challenge, too. You know, thoroughbreds tend to be curious and like a challenge. So that kind of makes sense. By the way, also, Stuart, we'll chat a little bit about this. Misty, one of our listeners, just sent me a Facebook message holding up her off-track thoroughbred magazine. In the picture.
Yeah, bam.
Yeah, so you got it out since we talked to you last to tell us a little bit about that.
It's really exciting. It's really expensive. It's a huge risk and commitment for the organization to do the magazine because we're putting ourselves on the line financially and, you know, hustling to get ads in it to pay for it, hustling to get people signed up as members, which is what you do to be a subscriber. It's a $45 a year membership, and it gets you a bunch of other things and discounts as well as the magazine. And you can do all that on our website. But the content of this one, the first one was the program for the makeover. So there was a lot of pages full of that kind of stuff, and it was 6 months ago. Now we're on a quarterly schedule. And it's just really interesting stuff with really good writers. Right after this call, I'm going to be talking to the writer who's doing the feature story for the next issue, the summer issue, which I was saying is about the Western disciplines. And the cover of the next issue will be something Western. We've been doing a lot of eventing, maybe too much eventing because, you know, thoroughbreds are prominent in eventing. But the magazine is really cool.
Did I?
Educational. It's the kind of thing that you stick up on your shelf and keep. You know, it's quarterly, so it's not the latest news. It's information that really doesn't exist anywhere else.
Did I see Lainey Ashker's on this cover I'm looking at? Is that Lainey?
Yep. It was, you know, we distributed thousands of copies at Rolex. People were picking them up left and right. And so we, you know, we covered the Rolex horses that were thoroughbreds pretty heavily in that issue. We put Anthony Patch up there. Unfortunately, he had a good weekend. Not good enough to win, but... You know, he's always knocking on the door.
When I just saw, I just looked at Lainey's mother this morning on her second day of her journey cross country. And I watched a couple of her videos on her Facebook page on her thoroughbreds.
Yep. You know, what's cool is that from both Rolex and Badminton the next week, who doesn't have as many thoroughbreds as we do. Americans do thoroughbreds more than any other country, really. But that the age of these horses, and these horses who race as two-year-olds, we had an 18-year-old at Rolex, an 18-year-old thoroughbred at Badminton, and a bunch of 17-year-olds, and very few horses that were 17 and up in other breeds. So these thoroughbreds, they go and they go and they go and they go.
And I think that's a misconception that a lot of people have because they hear about thoroughbreds breaking down all the time on the track, right? So they have this misconception.
And some do.
Yeah, and they have this misconception that they're all delicate, you know? But in fact, that's not true.
Yeah.
You know, and I've dealt with the same thing in the Mustangs. I recently did an event with my Mustang where it was a lot of general public, so not a lot of horse people, and a lot of misconceptions there too. They'll ask, oh, did you rescue him? I'm like, no, I adopted him. He wasn't in an alley eating trash. Or, oh wow, he's really calm for a Mustang. And so I think thoroughbreds kind of get the same flack. You know, I think a lot of people hear off the track thoroughbred and think, oh, you must have rescued him, or is he sound? And in my personal experience and the experience I've seen with others who've been posting on Facebook about theirs, they're real hardy animals. They're, you know, my horse that I got off the track, he was incredibly well trained. A great horse. He was born and bred at the same place. You know, the same person who bred him also trained him, put a wonderful foundation on him. He's a little bitey, which they were very upfront about, but he's a young gelding who was not, you know, not always a gelding. And for just kind of going down to the track and buying a horse, it was a great experience. And, you know, athletic, hardy, sound, healthy, great horse.
Good. Yeah. Well, yeah, there are a ton of stories like that.
Stuart, October 27th through the 30th is when the Mustang Makeover is. Is it the Thoroughbred Makeover was when the Thoroughbred Makeover is. It's the Kentucky Horse Park and the old arena there. Do people buy tickets? How do they attend the event? And how can they keep track of who's training what and kind of see the competitors along the way?
Yeah. In mid-June, about 3-4 weeks, we'll have the full schedule of all the activities, including demos, as well as tickets online that you can get off of our website. The tickets are going to be free if you're a member. So you pay your $45, you get to the makeover for free, you get discounts on all these other events, you get the magazine, you get the directory. The tickets will be fairly inexpensive for everybody else. That's not the major cost. It's getting there and getting a hotel room. But those will be up at the website. And as far as following horses and following trainers, if you go to our website under Thoroughbred Makeover, you can scroll down and you can click on competitors. You can also click on horses, and you can get information about them as well as links to whatever their website is or their Facebook page where they're talking about what they're doing. So we did not do separate blogs for every trainer this year because that was that was a lot of work.
Yeah, that's
for us to manage this. But so some of the trainers are blogging. Some of them are putting a lot of updates. Some of them are staying real quiet.
And some are doing radio shows. So there you go.
Yeah.
And one thing I can promise you, Stuart, is that Mary is bringing the moonshine to the party.
Good. What flavor moonshine? You know, in Kentucky, they sell apple like pie. Blueberry and peach. Apple pie moonshine.
That's
okay.
My favorite.
Okay. I like blueberry pie moonshine. But, you know, I'll drink picky, anything.
Picky guy. All right. Thank you, Stuart.
What? Good.
Retired racehorseproject.org. See you in October.
Yep.
All right.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Well, there you go. You can blow the building up. He just gave you permission.
I can't tell you how excited I am. Hopefully, the last time I tried to do fire in a freestyle didn't work out so well, but I'm looking to redeem myself.
All right. We'll see. Is the fire going to be like hanging off the ceiling, coming up from the floor? Are we talking flamethrowers or just gentle flames? You know, what are we talking here?
Who knows?
You know, because we just watched BattleBots last night, which, by the way, is one of Jennifer and I's favorite shows, just because we like seeing mechanical things destroy each other. And there was a lot of fire involved there, too, and it didn't work out so well for some of them. They burned themselves up. So just saying. Just be careful with your fire.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. No. No. Safety,
you know,
would be...
I don't know if this is a good idea. You have a horse named Moonshine. Getting moonshine near a fire is never a good idea. Just saying.
Yes, yes. Well, I haven't introduced him to it yet, so it'll all be contingent on how he feels about it. We still got some time.
So we might honestly be going with ice instead? Is that what you're saying?
Or like ribbons or something. I don't know.
Put an ice skating rink in and we'll go that route. Yeah. Well, thank you so much to Stuart. We always appreciate it when he comes on. He's a good sport. We're going to take a break here for a commercial and then we have a song for you as well. And we'll be back. We have a winner on with us today, don't we? Coming up a little later in the show.
We have the winner of the most recent Mustang Makeover, which was in Florida, I think this past weekend.
Yeah,
that
right
is Marsha Hartford Sapp. And she's a Mustang Makeover veteran, and she just won this weekend. She had an amazing freestyle, so we're going to talk with her, kind of keep this whole training competition freestyle theme going.
Sounds good. We'll be back right after this.
In the world of horse racing and elite equestrian sports, it's all about how to prepare and repair. IceVibe is a truly portable and highly efficient circulation therapy system for your horse. Before activity, prepare to prevent damage by using the IceVibe's vibration pads. Repair after the event by using the unique combination of cold packs and vibration to minimize swelling and encourage blood flow. And because it's battery powered, IceVibe is truly portable. The essential and affordable tool to prepare and repair. IceVibe.
You can find out more details about IceVibe at ice-vibe.com or horseware.com or ask your local tack shop or online supplier for more information about IceVibe circulation therapy from Horseware.
dear, listen to my tale. It ain't much of a story, so you better listen well. In southeast Oklahoma, when I was but a boy, I ran many a match race and I never wanted more. Believe that I could ride anything with hair. Then one California morning I found myself there at Los Alamitos Racecourse in 1962. Where the story starts and ends is where you find the dream comes true. Courage in the saddle, face into the wind. You ride each time like you won't live again. If you're gonna ride to win, son, it's gonna be a battle. Better have a heart of steel, courage in the saddle. Dial was 10 to 1 in 64 on May the 9th. We were 25 large richer when she crossed the finish line. Night of races at Bay Meadows, 68 to 73. There never was a jockey who had won as much as me. We were back at Alamitos in May of 84. Thick fog down the straightaway, mud on the racetrack floor. John Critter on face in the crowd, turn left in front of me. And the bottom side of running hooves was all that I could see. Courage in the saddle, face into the wind. Ride each time like you won't live again. If you're gonna ride to win, son, it's gonna be a battle. Better have a heart of steel, courage in the saddle. Crush my foot and ankle, my shoulder and my. But my longing for the racetrack no surgery could replace. So as a 20-year outrider, I'll finally retire from the course at Alamitos, the place I first caught fire. When the years have passed right through me, I'll never be the same. And the changing times in politics, Lord, we ought to be ashamed. For we're short of field and horses, Midwest jockeys, they're all through. Where the story starts and ends is where you find the dream comes true. Courage in the saddle, face into the wind. You ride each time like you won't live again. If you're gonna ride to win, son, it's gonna be a battle. Better have a heart of steel, courage.
Well, that was Bren Hill with Courage in the Saddle. You can find all of his music at brenhill.com. I'm speaking today with Mary Kitzmiller, who's co-hosting, and we are brought to you by Horseware. You can find all of their terrific products at horseware.com. Mary is here, of course, with us the second Thursday of every month to talk training and just a little bit of everything. And Mary, we had a limerick. Remember Jennifer started the show with a limerick?
Yes.
Well, we had one of the listeners post a limerick, and this talks about our recent experience at Rolex. There once was a show in Kentucky where the weather was always quite sucky. The riders, of course, just stayed on their course, and the rest of us called them lucky. pretty good, Kelly.
Oh, I love that.
That was pretty good, and it really did describe the day.
Yes. Very cool.
Now, next year, we're talking... next year, we're getting your butt up to Rolex. We are. We're going to get you up there. We have several of our hosts, including Debbie Laux and a couple of others that have never been to Rolex.
That has been my bucket list. I've never been to Rolex myself. I really want to go see it. I'm excited.
We think we should all go. We'll get a bunch of the hosts to come in. Helena, get Jamie to come out. Get Debbie and you and Emily from the jumping episode has never seen Rolex. And we thought if we just went to Airbnb and rented a great big house, wouldn't that be a party? That'd be a lot of fun. We'll have to get that arranged and make sure we all get together for Rolex. And we always meet a lot of listeners. It's so much fun.
I have to ask something reveal how ignorant I am. Yeah. Is Rolex just 3-day eventing, or do they have other disciplines as well?
It's just 3-day eventing, and that's all you want. And about 1,000 stands for shopping.
Awesome. The shopping is what I'll be the most interested in, of course.
Everybody's the most interested in, and cross-country day. We pretty much, nobody watches dressage. We're literally.
Oh, I would watch dressage. Oh, yeah.
You'll be out there like everybody else for two dressage tests, and then you'll be off shopping again. And then Saturday, we all do cross-country together, and then Sunday, we all watch the show Jumping to see who wins.
Awesome.
See? It's that simple. That would be... And then in the evenings, we go out and have dinner and have fun. So
very cool. That's a cool part of the country too. It's just a really neat area.
Yes, it is. And you know, I got to spend time with you there at Road to the Horse. And by the way, we're still getting compliments. And I heard from several people when we were at Rolex, several of our listeners who complimented us on our coverage at Road to the Horse. So good job, girl.
Woohoo! Yay!
People really enjoyed it, and you did a terrific job with that.
That was my first time out the gate as a commentator.
You were great. You were terrific.
It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. I had to keep Dan James from cussing the whole time.
She kept kicking
it. It's a lot of stress on my part. Yeah. Those Australians.
Dan had you kicking him on one side and his fiance kicking him on the other.
Yeah.
That's funny. All right, let's answer another quick question while Jennifer gets our guest on. Let's see here. This one is about clicker training, actually. Katie asked, when doing clicker training, what to do when your horse seems less than interested in trying things for treats, not food motivated? Do I just need more patience, better treats? My horse is interested in treats, but does not try things for treats. She's getting the targeting okay. So that's interesting. Just not super food motivated, I don't think. Mary, hold on a second. You need to unplug your mic. We should have done that during the song. We have this problem with
one of
Max.
These days I'll get it together.
No, it happens in all the shows.
I just got a Surface Pro, but I haven't downloaded Skype to it yet.
Oh,
so I'm going
nice.
To try that the next time around, see how that goes.
Oh, you sound better. You're good.
Good. Okay. This is actually a fairly common issue with clicker training. I'm seeing a couple of things that are informing me. It says the horse does appear to be interested in treats, but doesn't want to do things for the treats. So may actually be food motivated, but you're just having trouble getting the horse to do what you want. So it is worth the time to try out a few different types of treats, be it carrots or their grain or something you bought from the store, to see what really piques their interest. When you find that and your horse is still just not really understanding what to do or doesn't seem to want to do anything, I would say that in the beginning, make sure you keep your sessions really short, 5 minutes, and then you're done. You can always come back later. You can do 100 of those sessions a day, but keep them in very short increments. And people will see their horse kind of detach and walk away during clicker training, and they'll think, oh, he's bored or he's not motivated. In my opinion, just from what I'm seeing, I don't think it's that at all. I think they need to go process. I think they've got a lot to think about. This is kind of a new thing for them, and they need to just go away and think. And I usually, in the first sessions, I allow them to do that. I allow them to have the freedom to, if you don't want to mess around, all right, we'll do it later. Does this mean you can't do anything else with your horse during this time? Not at all. You can still get them out and ride them, but for the clicker training part of your day, keep it 5 minutes, try to leave your horse wanting more, and whatever your goals are with clicker training, you're going to learn to slice those goals down into 100,000 million tiny little tasks. And this seems tedious at first, and it seems like you're not going to get anything done. But if you just take it one little step at a time, you can build on that and get more and more. My horses that I've been clicker training with for a year or two are very, you know, they have enough stamina, I could mess with it for hours. But in the beginning, even my horses that love food and are very well trained and they're, you know, they work with me well, when I'm doing the clicker training, I find after about 5 minutes, their eyes kind of glaze over and they can't do anymore. And like I said, I really honestly think they just need to process the situation, go away, clean some stalls, fill the water buckets, whatever you got to do, and then come back and try again.
All right. Very good. Well, we have our next guest coming up here. She's been on the show a couple of times before, and she was just, you know, in Northern Florida at a Mustang competition, and her video has now been going around. I assume it's pretty much gone viral at this point. And her name is Marsha Hartford Sapp, and she is here as the winner of the latest Mustang makeover here in Florida. Congratulations, Marsha. Good job.
Thank you so much, and good morning.
Is it customary now to buy ball gowns to go out and do the competitions?
Well, it seems to be a trend this year. We've certainly seen a lot of freestyles involving dresses.
The one year I'm not doing it.
What was that, Mary?
I said the one year I'm not doing it, and I have my sequined ball gown already. And this is here it comes in fashion.
Well, I did steal Mary's secret.
That's it.
It was her idea.
Well, you look terrific, by the way. You looked great.
Yeah, I just was watching your freestyle this morning. I didn't get to finish it, so I'm going to definitely finish it right after this interview. But it was very, very, I have to say, it was really nice, very pretty. The horse was, we were just talking, wow, that horse doesn't even look like a Mustang, which, as you know, is a little bit of a stereotype. What look do Mustangs have? They come in all shapes and sizes. But it was a wonderful freestyle, I thought, along with the element of it being entertaining for the crowd and offering a lot as far as that goes. But the training was really good as well. And that's evident because you got a perfect horsemanship score. Is that correct?
That is correct. I was very excited and very proud of that.
And I think that's a really big deal. You know, some folks will see the freestyle and I don't know, maybe because they're just unhappy in life, but they'll say, oh, it's just all about tricks. I'm like, no, you don't understand. The horsemanship that goes into these freestyles is immense. And these trainers often also have to do a compulsory round to prove that their horsemanship is on point. So for me as a trainer, if I looked at my score and I saw perfect horsemanship score, I would be ecstatic, as I'm sure you were.
Yeah, I sure was.
Now, tell us a little bit about your Mustang.
Well, my Mustang, we called Freedom. She was a four-year-old gray mare that came from a herd in Wyoming. Divide Basin is the herd that she came from. And horses for the makeover are randomly selected. It's a computer-generated draw or a lottery, as you would say. And when we got to the makeover, there was about 50 mares that were selected for the adult trainers. Before I knew which horse I was getting, I walked through the pens. There was just four or five gray mares, and I had really wanted a gray mare. I'm not sure why. I just really had my heart set on one, and there was such a low probability that I would get one. The computer-generated draw gave me this gray mare, who was about 14.3, and we loaded her up in the trailer with two other Mustang mares. I had two interns at my barn that also trained for the competition as well. We came home to Tallahassee and unloaded them in our round pen. The horse, Freedom, is probably one of the brightest and most intelligent Mustangs that I've trained for the competition. She amazed me every day with what she was able to calmly take in and process information. And I had to really, as a trainer, make myself do little small steps with her because she was so smart and so bright. She really could do a lot. But when they come out of the holding facilities, you know that they're not fit. They've kind of been sitting around for a while. You have to be careful with their physical and emotional well-being. So we just went along training a little bit at a time, which worked great for the horse and me. With my busy schedule, I only had a little bit of time to offer to the horse every day. But what a bright, intelligent, and kind horse for me to get this time around.
I was just going to ask you, because you've done quite a few of these now, how she compared with the other horses you've done. Was she far and away the best one you've had, or is this pretty a typical experience when you train Mustangs? How did she rate compared to the other Mustangs you've worked with?
You know, I think she's pretty typical. I find them very bright and very easy to train for the most part because they haven't had any bad information. They come out of the wild, they don't know anything, but they don't know the wrong thing either. And to me, it's very simple to train a horse when they haven't been taught the wrong thing. Certainly, she's one of the brightest and very athletic. Her training came along well. And I'm not sure if that's a tribute to the horse and her intelligence, or if I just get a little better with every horse I train, that the training process just gets a little bit easier. But it could be a combination of both as well. But I really admired her sensibility and calmness and willingness to try to work with me.
Well, that was pretty evident in her ride. You know, it was, like I said, there was still plenty to entertain, but underneath all of that, it was a very just calm, quiet, real pretty ride. When you get these guys in training, and you do the, for a makeover setting, do you have a specific program you follow? Is it different with every horse? Do you have any kind of goals you set? Like, I want to be on by day three, or I hope to be on within the first 30 days. What kind of guidelines do you lay out before you start training one?
Well, I definitely have a program that I try to follow that we use for every horse that comes through my program. And it involves the groundwork first, basic, getting them to lead to pressure, getting them to bend and yield, introducing brushing, picking up the feet, doing things that makes the horse comfortable with me. We progress to saddling, and I'm a big proponent of ground driving my horses. So I ground drive all of my horses in long lines. It's kind of like ground driving them. Both behind them and from the inside of the arena to teach them steering and stopping, first off of a Basel and then off of a bit. So the horses understand how to go and stop and turn before I even get on them. And our process of getting on them really depends on their understanding of the system that we use. This particular horse, she was long lining and doing really well with the ground driving by the end of the first week. So I think I was on her within 7 or 8 sessions, but I certainly made sure for her comfort level that she was ready and that she was able to be confident carrying a rider and stopping and turning. I never go in with the mindset that I'm saddling this horse this day or introducing a bit this day or we're riding this day. You know, I always let the horse tell me what they're ready for.
And I think, you know, as a trainer, I kind of, the way I've explained it to people, it's sort of like an egg timer. You know, when I to explain, when I first started out, I very much needed someone to tell me, okay, you should get on that horse. She's ready. Or you need to be doing more of this before the horse is ready. But then when you've done so many horses, there's something that goes off in my brain as I'm working the horse in the round pen. And it's literally like a little ding. Okay, it's time. And I think that's informed by, you know, it becomes an intuition, but I think that's informed by working with so many and then also working with a lot of trainers to tell you, you know, look, this horse is showing you this. That means you need to do this. And so I'm sure you would agree that after so long and doing so many horses and getting a lot of knowledge under your belt, it just becomes more of a feeling. The horse is saying, okay, I'm ready now.
Yep, you bet. And that's important for the horse's well-being and for our safety too. If something happens and frightens the horse, you set yourself back in training. So it's really important that I read my horses, that I make sure that the things I'm asking them are within their comfort level and that they're ready and they're prepared. This particular horse, for example, in my freestyle, the end of the freestyle, I took off the bridle and I cantered the horse and did some flying lead changes without the bridle. And I didn't go into training the horse thinking that I would be able to ride the horse bridleless or even do lead changes. I probably knew the horse was ready to start riding bridleless only about 3 weeks ago. So she hasn't been doing it long, but I knew that she understand voice commands. I knew that she understand that the change of the seat meant stop and turn. I knew that she was moving really well off of my legs and that she was confident with me as a rider that I would take care of her. So I waited and waited and waited and only did the bridleless work just a few weeks ago before the freestyle. And that's when that horse told me that she was ready.
And that's a really good point. I think people are so captivated by bridleless riding and you know, they want to learn how to do it. And I've even had people asking, oh, could you do a video on how to go bridleless, which I think is a great idea. But for me, and kind of going off of what you've just explained, it's really just about training. If you've got all your foundation elements in place and you've taught them to work off your legs and you've got body control and the horse is working with you, it's at that point really just a matter of dropping the bridle. It's not that you thought on day one, okay, I'm going to do a bridleless freestyle and we have to do our bridleless training every day. It's more that you're just training. And then at some point, the horse comes along to a point where you can just remove the bridle and everything is still there. And I think even there's another veteran trainer who did a lot of early Mustang makeovers, Logan Leach. He did a lot of really amazing bridleless freestyles. And I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, he said that he didn't drop the bridle until his freestyle. He did. It's not like he sat in his arena and practiced at home, you know, and said, okay, here's my bridleless freestyle. We're going to do our bridleless training. It just kind of happened. And, you know, it sort of happened naturally off of just good training.
You bet. It's kind of we evolve into it when the horse is ready. And there was no real additional training I had to do with the horse to ride her bridleless. All of the training had already been done and all the understanding was already there.
And and that's been my experience as well. I wanted to say you had a pedestal out in your freestyle and it had the name Katie on that. So what kind of significance did that have for your freestyle?
That was really important for me to be able to do. For this particular Mustang makeover, the Williams family, Katie Colby and her brother Joe, Katie Colby and Colby's wife. Colby is the wife of Joe and Katie is Joe's sister. The three family members were all going to train Mustangs together for the competition, which I was really excited about seeing them and really admired their family spirit for that. Several weeks after we picked up the horses for the Mustang makeover, Katie Williams was involved in a very bad car accident where a driver ran through a red light and hit her car. And she's been in ICU in the hospital ever since. And we're talking 7 weeks later. Mm. It was a very bad accident that certainly has tugged at the heartstrings of all of the Mustang trainers, everybody who knows Katie. And we're all really rooting for her recovery, which will be long. So the bottom of my pedestal, I had a sign made that said Ride for Katie, which was a theme throughout the makeover, which was our tribute to Katie Williams and her family and her recovery, because we all wanted Katie to be there at the makeover with us, and she's not been able to leave the hospital yet. Many of the trainers wore signs that said Ride for Katie or made a tribute in their freestyle, and I was certainly happy to be able to do the same as the rest of the trainers had done for Katie over the weekend.
That happened here in Ocala, didn't it?
That was here in Ocala. You bet.
Yeah. I saw that notice. I didn't put two and two together. I mean, I saw that article about the accident, and I just never put two and two together. Wow.
Yeah, that was one of our beloved Mustang trainers. We wish her and her family the best, and we're all rooting for her.
Well, our best to her and her family.
I think that's such a good testament to the nature of these competitions. Yes, it's a competition, and in the strictest sense of competition, it's cutthroat, and you've got the best of the best going against each other. But at the end of the day, a lot of people use the term Mustang family, and that's truly what it is. You know, people really support each other, and I saw a lot of that. Just kind of taking a cursory glance at the coverage over the weekend, I did see a lot of that going on. And if I'm not mistaken, you know, these horses are auctioned off at the end to the public. And I believe, did they kick back the proceeds for Katie's horse to her medical bills? Is that right?
Yep, that is correct. Katie's horse, Barbie, was ridden at the event by Katie's brother, Joe. And even though it was against the rules for Joe to be a competitive member because he wasn't the originally assigned rider, they did allow him to ride all of the classes so the public could see the horse perform all of the tasks. At the end of the makeover, when the horses were auctioned off, all of the proceeds that were raised by Joe's horse, Barbie, were given directly to Katie and her medical fund.
And there is a GoFundMe I have found also for Katie, and we'll be sure to post that on our Facebook page.
Yep, you bet.
Well, thank you for letting us know about that. Speaking of the auction, were the prices higher than in past years?
Yeah, the prices were very high. Florida, as you well know, is a good horse market, where we have a lot of educated owners that are always looking for something special. And with the recent public display of Mustangs in the show world, Mr. Popper in the hunter world, Cobra in the FAI dressage ring, and Alyssa Wallace and her eventing Mustang, all in the Southeast region, there was a lot of interest in people that wanted to adopt Mustangs and use them for sports and for show. So we had a lot of interested adopters. I think there was almost 100 people that were registered bidders, lots of phone bidders. And the prices of the horses were quite a bit higher than what the national average has been, which says a lot for the popularity of the Mustangs and what people are doing to promote them. I went into the adoption knowing that my horse would be popular, but had no idea the amount of bids that particular horse would get.
Tell us.
Well, I have to tell you, it was very emotional seeing the horse auctioned off.
I bet.
After spending 100 days with her, and the horse just being such a wonderful tribute to what the Mustang is. At the end of the day, the horse was sold for $8,000. Wow. To
I was wondering a woman, if that was your horse.
Yep, to a woman who lives near Atlanta who wants specifically to promote the Mustang breed. And she's a very accomplished rider herself. The horse came back home with me to Tallahassee for additional training. The new owner will take lessons. And in the spring, we are going to debut the horse in the dressage show world. So the horse will have a show career. Yep, and I'm going to still be involved as her trainer, which is, you know, probably a dream come true for everyone who cares about their horses. So in between Freedom and her new wonderful owner, Chris, and myself, she's going to hopefully continue to shine and people are going to see more of her.
Very, very cool. And, you know, I'm kind of used to traveling in circles of people who have some experience with Mustangs, and they have a good understanding of how versatile these are. And I didn't realize until I recently did an event with my Mustang, Earth Day Texas, and it was a lot of general public walking through. And people still, and there's just an article that was posted about it, people still have a lot of misconceptions. My horse is kind of on the small side, and people looked at him and thought, wow, he's small for a Mustang. And then you'll have another group of people that would say, oh, but you can't find a Mustang that's over 15 hands, or oh, he's so calm, or man, you can actually ride him, but just on trails, right? And you get all these questions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I tell people is, you know, whatever you want in a horse, you can go to the pens and find that horse. And I kind of joke, you know, do you want an Andalusian without a price tag? Well, go find a Mustang. You can find some real Spanishy Mustangs that have, you know, have this great look about them and these, this wonderful movement. And I've got one at home and at only 3 years old, he's tipping about 16 hands and he's got this huge, amazing movement. And I'm thinking he needs to go be a dressage horse himself. And so it's amazing how versatile these horses are. And they absolutely can do anything you want. You know, you can find the right one for your discipline, no matter what you're looking for.
Yep, that is absolutely true. Alyssa Wallace is eventing several Mustangs. There's a large pony here in Florida that went to pony finals last year. One of my other Mustangs, Cobra, competed at Pre-St. George last year, which is an FEI level, an international level. But that same horse, Cobra, also won a world championship title in Western dressage. So they can really do a lot of jobs. I think there was also one that was driving at Devon last year as well. And you're right, they can do any job. You can go to the pen, find many different conformations, many different types, and train them for what you want, because they are very trainable.
Well, and even back in the day, there's a real famous one, a cow horse trainer, Bobby Ingersoll, had a Kyger Mustang called Kyger Cougar. And if I'm not mistaken, that horse was incredibly competitive in the cow horse world. I have to look this up. I think he even showed at the Snaffle-Bit Futurity. So on the English side, there's a lot of Mustangs that are representing and really making a great name for themselves. But you can also find the same thing on the Western side.
Yep, you bet. Look at what Bobby Kerr is doing with his Mustangs out west. He's at a traveling show. He shows up to rodeos. The horses that he uses are all Mustangs that he trained out of the BLM pen. And these horses are doing some cool stuff. They are riding in cars. They're jumping over huge objects. I mean, the things that his horses do is breathtaking and unbelievable and inspiring. And he's entertaining thousands and thousands of people a week with those horses and really educating people on the trainability as well.
Well, Marcia, congratulations again. Good job. And you represented Florida well, by the way. Just wanted to throw that in here because I live in Ocala. So I wanted to get that in. But you did great. It's SouthernOaksEquestrian.com, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, I can't think of a better end than the way this ended, the person that bought it and the, you know, the whole situation. It has to make you feel so much better about letting this particular horse go. It's going to have a great home in Atlanta and be doing some cool things up there. And then you'll be on to the next one.
Yep, I hope so. I hope they do another one in Florida next year. People love the show. It was a great crowd. I loved it. I hope to be able to do it again.
Well, you know, we just had Stuart Pittman on, who runs the Thoroughbred Makeover, and Mary's doing her first Thoroughbred, so maybe next year it'll be a Thoroughbred for you, Marcia.
Never know.
No commitment there, Mary. We didn't get...
Thanks, it's a good
Marcia.
Way to play it.
SouthernOaksEquestrian.com. Take care, Marcia.
Thank you so much.
She wasn't committing to that. Like, never know, which means
play.
No way in hell. That's what I got out of that anyway. She has quite a facility up there too in the Panhandle of Florida.
Oh yeah, she does a lot of cool things with the dressage and hunters and her Mustang Cobra, gorgeous horse that's doing the big time dressage and so slowly we're seeing more Mustangs.
She was mostly in jumpers, if I remember right. She was really involved in hunter jumper circles there, in the southern part of the country here. Well, we are going to call it a day, right? Thank you so much, Mary, for joining us today. If you want to hear any of Mary's past episodes, you can find them at horsesinthemorning.com. Just search for Mary Kitzmiller. But you have some events coming up. Tell us about those.
Yes, I've got Memorial Day weekend. I've got a clinic in South Carolina that I'm doing with James Cooler, and we are going to cover a lot of ground. We're going to do a little bit of horsemanship and groundwork and liberty and positive reinforcement and just whatever else we can cram into a weekend. So that's going to be a really fun event, and you can go to James' pages on social media or online to find out more about that. There's a Mustang event this weekend I'm taking my horse Jax to, you know, just show more people about the versatility of the Mustang. And I'm sure I've got more coming up on the horizon. I'll have to look at my calendar.
Sounds good. And where can people find your calendar?
MaryKitzmiller.com. And I'm also on Facebook at Mary Kitzmiller Horsemanship.
And of course, do you still have stuff they can buy, artwork and things?
I do. I have some DVDs and clickers, and I think I have a little bit of artwork on there. I've got some saddle blankets. So yeah, all sorts of fun stuff.
And we have to talk about, we never did get my car door for you to do.
Yes.
We got to figure that out.
You want a minion car door, right?
Yes, I wanted a minion car door. And minion I figured the door. First car I ever, I, the first car I learned to drive in and I took my driver's test in was a VW Bug. So wouldn't it be cool to have a
that
VW Bug?
That was my
Bug?
First car.
Was it?
Yeah, I had a 72 Super Beetle.
Oh, yeah. We our family went from Beetles to Super Beetles. We had every version of VW you can imagine.
We just bought a VW Thing.
Really?
From Kentucky,
Is it still run?
Well...
Because they did not have the best reputation.
Well, I am finding that out. It's in great shape. It's a little convertible, and it runs half the time.
Well, you can take the doors off and paint them, Mary.
I know. Well, I found out the same thing about my Super Beetle. The carburetor was notoriously terrible, and it would stall out anytime I was idling. So what I'd have to do, this was in high school, is I'd be at a stoplight and my car would die if I just let it idle because it didn't idle. And so I had to put it in neutral, kick up the emergency brake and rev the gas the whole time at a red light. So everyone thought me and my Super Bug was trying to drag race them. And then it started doing it around corners. So if I was like driving around a slow, like turning left onto a street and only going like 35 miles an hour, I had to put it in neutral, going around the corner and rev the gas and then pop it into gear as I came out of the corner. And the doors didn't stay closed. So the door, I had to keep my hand on the door handle too. And it only got Mexican radio and oldies.
And
which
you know
what
else? I remember about the Beetles and the Super Beetles, they didn't have any heat. There was no fan to distribute the heat into the car from the heater. So it just sort of wafted up through this little vent that was down.
I had nothing that even wafted. I had to wear gloves in the winter because I couldn't close the vent in front of the steering wheel. So the Arctic air would come in. So I had to wear gloves in the winter. And
I remember driving down the road one day. This is another problem that I don't know why anybody owned these damn things. We're driving down the road today in the pouring down rain, and the windshield wipers never worked. But they were so small that you could actually reach. We were I was driving down the road with the hand out the window, making the windshield wipers go by hand.
I've done that. Yep. And my windshield always had a haze on it. I tried to put vinegar on it. I couldn't hardly see. So I would just, in the winter when it would, you know, I didn't have any defrosters or anything. Plus the windshield wasn't hazy anyway. So I just rolled down the window and do Jim Carrey and just stick like Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, and just stick my head out the window driving. And
I figured this was Hitler's revenge because, you know, it was invented during Hitler's time. And I think that he just thought, well, look, if I'm going to lose this war, I'm going to screw these people for the next 40 years. And he did with the VW Bug.
I think the people's car, I think, is what it translates
and
to.
And the clutches. If you learn to drive, one good thing about that is if you learn to drive on a Bug, they had the stiffest clutches in the world. If you learn to drive on a Bug, you could drive any stick. Because there was no clutch different than a Bug.
Well, there's only four gears, so how hard is it to mess up? When every morning to start it, I had to open the door and kick it down the driveway and then pop the clutch when I got onto the street to get it running.
Did you ever get any dates during this time, by the way?
You know, No.
Well, there you go.
I never thought there was a correlation until then. I was also in band and played the clarinet. So that might have had a really.
You had band. You had the VW that didn't run. You were just an embarrassment.
I had a date in high school. Yeah.
You were the horse girl. That's the other thing. Although Texas, that might not have been so bad. But
no, it was. Well, it was in Oklahoma. And I remember lamenting to a friend in middle school. I was like, why does no one like me? And I was fishing for compliments. I was hoping my friend would say, people like you. And she said, well, you talk about horses an awful lot.
You smell like crap.
Yeah.
Oh, good time. And that VW.
Yes.
Yeah.
Special.
Yeah. I know. I drove one too, so I get it in high school. And then our other option in the family was not only the bugs, the assortment of bugs that we had that were always falling apart, is we had a great big van. We had the old Chevy van because there were four boys. There was, you know, six in the family. So we had the great big Chevy van. And then, you know, with all the windows, it wasn't even the cool closed-in kind. It wasn't a sin bin. It was the one with the windows looked like a church bus. So there was that you could go on dates with, too.
Oh, yeah. And pick up kids with promises of candy. Sounds like one of those vans. Well, I have to say, my new most favorite movie ever had a VW bug in it this weekend. So.
What was that?
Captain America: Civil War.
Oh, it's the greatest movie.
Oh, you're going to love it. Well, are you a fan of comic book movies?
Well, yeah, we have become Marvel fans. So,
okay,
not so much DC, but Marvel.
It, but this is the greatest Marvel movie and perhaps the greatest piece of cinema ever filmed since Citizen
Kane. Listen to you. And this is coming from our cinema expert.
Yes, it's awesome.
Are you excited to see it now?
Lay down the gauntlet, Glenn.
Yeah.
I'm going to see it again.
I have to go see it.
Three more times.
Now,
do you
see them in 3D or you just go 2D?
I saw this one in 3D because of what time it was, but I have a stigmatism. I think I have trouble with it.
Yeah, Jennifer does too. She gets sick.
I would rather have seen it in regular old 2D, and but it was good.
Without giving anything away, with a spoiler free, what makes this one better than the other ones?
It was funny when it needed to be. It was serious when it had to be. There was a scene in it that was so good dramatically that I actually forgot I was watching a superhero movie for a second. It was really good. The Russos, who also directed The Winter Soldier, which is now my second favorite movie.
Which had to be up to this point the best one of the Marvel
movies. It was definitely the best of the Marvel movies. They had so many storylines thrown in, so many characters they had to add. Spider-Man at the last second, a Marvel/Disney finally got Spider-Man away from Sony. So you add all this stuff, you have new characters, Black Panther, you're throwing Ant-Man in there, you've got Spider-Man. And I thought they were going to screw this up because there's so much to add. Plus,
there were 12 superheroes, right?
There were. Plus, you had the already rich storyline with Bucky, who is my cinema boyfriend, the Winter Soldier, and Captain America. And they handled it really well. For so many things thrown in, it didn't feel overpowering. It didn't feel like it was slapped together last minute like some certain DC movies do. So it was great. And the action scenes were phenomenal. They were really good. I just thought it was a great movie. I can't sell it enough.
So we always do a metric where we use a bale of hay and how many flakes would you give it? You're basically giving it a full 3-string bale.
Indeed.
100-pounder.
Yes.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yes. Of alfalfa. Yeah, if you get really nitpicky, you can poke some holes in the plot. I mean, it is a superhero movie
yes.
After all. That's right. I would have been happier if the whole thing focused on the Winter Soldier, who's my favorite character, but you can't have it all. But it was really good, and it made me excited. It was the first studio that's done right by Spider-Man, in my opinion. The kid
who
played
Spider-Man. I heard that from a bunch of people, because Spider-Man has always pretty much just sucked. It's just the casting has sucked. It's all just sucked.
This was exactly perfect.
Yeah, because there was a lot to live up to with Spider-Man, and nobody's gotten it right. And I have heard that about this movie. Everybody has said Spider-Man's wins in this one.
I'm not a big Spider-Man fan in general, but this made me want to go watch his movie that's coming up.
And who was playing him? Do you remember?
you know, I should know this. Some kid.
Some kid.
That I've never heard of.
Some kid.
Yeah, just a string bean kid, which is kind of a perfect Spider-Man character. I'm going to have to IMDb this when we're done. But yeah, and he did a perfect job. It was funny and you know, he was really good and looked like he belonged with the Avengers, but also still kind of flawed. And so it was good. Great movie.
Well, I'm glad you did the review. Thank you so much. You're our resident.
I didn't mean to do an impromptu review.
Oh, no, that's okay. We like when you do reviews.
I feel better now that I've done that.
You are our expert on all things movie. So you'll have to start your own movie show here on the Horse Radio Network. We'll just find a way to tie a horse into everyone.
Each show would be 8 hours long.
That is true. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. We appreciate it. Get your ads in for really bad ads to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Send them over. We need some. So hop onto Craigslist today. It's not too hard to find really crappy Craigslist ads about horses or trailers or dogs or cats or donkeys or chickens. And then just send them over to Jennifer. And don't forget, a pair of smooth stride riding jeans is up on the chopping block this week. Or this month, somebody's going to win a pair of those that submits ads. So get yours in today. Jamie will be back tomorrow. And you have a very special guest planned for tomorrow, don't you, Jennifer?
I do. We have a young show jumping prodigy from Ireland that is a YouTube sensation. Is going to be on the show tomorrow by the name of Reese, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
And I saw he has been posting everywhere that he's going to be on an American radio show and is very excited about it. So we're looking forward to chatting with him tomorrow. Thank you, Mary.
All right. Thank you.
See you, everybody.